Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now, New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Wolcott, to answer questions about the new teacher evaluation system that took effect this term. This is the system imposed by the state after Mayor Bloomberg and the teachers' union failed to negotiate one that complies with state law. The system includes about 20% of a teacher's evaluation based on their student standardized test scores, about 60% from in-class observations and video recordings of teachers in action. The other 20% would be on criteria established by each school. The chancellor is joined in our studio by David Weiner, New York City Department of Education Deputy Chancellor for Talent, Labor, and Innovation. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
And good morning to you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
And listeners, especially teachers, call in to ask your questions. And if you want, evaluate the evaluations. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.
I'm looking at the clock, and it's 10 to 11, so teachers calling in.
Well, I do know that teachers have called in and tell me that they listen on their prep periods.
I know. Just teasing. Just teasing.
Now, the lion's share of that formula is in-class observations. And here is part of a letter that's posted on a teacher's listserv that a teacher sent me. It's from a veteran high school English teacher. And it says, in part, "It is the workload that is weighing my colleagues and me down. I'm already regularly working 11 or 12-hour days and feel like I never get enough done. People from MOSL, CUNY, the network, ATR admins, and my own admins have visited my classes no less than 5 times already this year. The expectations based on the new evaluation system are not only difficult but possibly impossible to successfully achieve. My lesson plans are ridiculously detailed and include things like how long each activity takes, academic vocabulary, differentiation and its rationale, key questions, and that's not even the content. And they conclude, I love my school. My admins are very supportive. My kids drive me nuts, but I adore them too. I am really proud of the things I am doing in my classroom this year, and I don't mind working hard, but I am exhausted."
So can I put this in context? And I appreciate that type of feedback because I think that's extremely helpful to us as we really work to make sure that all of our teachers are on the same page and understand where we're going. This is a transformative moment in, I think, school's history. We have not just a new evaluation system, we have Common Core, and you're blending all that to really benefit our students in the long run. And we're changing a system that's been in place for 80-plus years, a very simplistic system of SNU. And we're putting a very rigorous system in place that will benefit our teachers, but more importantly, benefit our students in the long run. So I truly empathize with what the teacher had to say because this is something brand new, and it's a lot of layering on of stuff that had been in the past and changing that. And in addition to that, just to put one more final piece in context, and then Dave can go into the deeper dive, in that we've put roughly $100 million in professional development to both get the information out but to do a lot of training. We've had talent coaches visiting our schools on a regular basis. And so I think Dave can start to talk about the details of what the teacher has laid out in the email that you received.
And to one of the points in that email, is there too much paperwork with these new Common Core standards that are so detailed? Because that teacher writes, after listing all the record keeping that they have to do, and that's not even the content.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it sounds like you've got a great teacher who sent this letter to you, so we're glad to have this person in our school system. I was actually a principal in New York City. I was principal for about 7 years in Brooklyn, and I worked under the previous system. Everyone in New York worked under the SU system, and essentially the old evaluation system had principals and teachers spending enormous amounts of time documenting what they were doing, spending time in their classrooms or in their offices writing up what they were doing. Principals would, you know, spend 30, 45 minutes doing an observation, then spend hours and hours writing up what they'd seen, writing up what they were documenting. And a lot of what this teacher described, what they were doing. The new evaluation system is really a complete paradigm shift to a new system in which we want people spending less time alone in their classrooms, sitting in their offices, reading over their notes, and more time getting into classrooms and talking with people, really starting that conversation, to help teachers develop. It has nothing to do with, you know, some principal sitting in an office reading documents. It really is a one-on-one conversation between the administrator and the teacher about a lesson that they observed and ways that that teacher can improve. And so we really are looking at a major paradigm shift. The old SU system actually had been in our in place for about 80 years. Since the 1930s, this system had been in place. And actually, teachers were complaining about this system in the 1930s. 80 years later, we finally have a new system. And it's going to take a little while till we actually can move away from people sitting in their offices doing paperwork, documenting what they're doing, and getting to the point where they realize they can move away from that and focus much more on observations and feedback.
And with the observations, I think one of the beauties of the observation system is both formal and informal. And it can be a longer period of time or it can be short observations as well. And that type of interaction is what we're encouraging throughout the system. So as David indicated, you know, you have more teachers in the classroom and it's not the formal writing down and then meeting and then going over it and then supporting our teachers where there needs to be improvement and making sure they become better teachers.
Well, to that point, we've also been collecting tweets from teachers in advance of you coming in. Since we knew it was going to be during the school day, we've done this over the last 24 hours and put the word out on Twitter. One tweet that came in last night asked, how good are principals anyway at evaluating teachers? How do you know the principals are good at it or objective about it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is probably the area that we've spent the most amount of focus, both over the last 3 years in terms of preparation for the system, but also over the last 2 months. We started this work about 3 years ago. The law that was going to move towards a new evaluation system for all districts in New York was passed about 5 years ago. And so we knew this was coming down. We weren't sure exactly when it was going to start, but we knew we had to get people prepared. So 3 years ago, we started asking principals to start looking at a standardized rubric. It's what we call the Danielson rubric. Charlotte Danielson is a researcher from New Jersey, and she's basically created a rubric that has shown what the best components of teaching really are. We started preparing administrators in what this looked like, and we asked them to start having conversations with their teachers about what it looked like. Over the last year, we did that for the last 2 years. Over the last year, we actually sent in what we call our master educators, which are talent coaches, which are former principals and former assistant principals who have been fully trained by Charlotte and the Danielson group and are truly normed in what this looks like. And they're going out and working with principals so principals can understand what this looks like so that we can have a standardized evaluation system for all teachers in our system.
And with that group, they've touched over 1,500 schools so far. And
actually,
so
it's 1,500 schools since the start of this school year.
Right.
We did two visits to every school from January through June last year. We did some summer training. And then even this school year, we actually have gone out to about 1,500 schools to actually work directly with teachers and principals on what the new Danielson rubric looks like and to train people on
it. So somebody observes the principals observing the teachers?
That's exactly right. It's essentially a coach, someone who's sitting next to you and telling you, you know, this is what you should be observing. Let's make sure we listen to this question. Let's think about what the next steps are for this teacher. It's someone who's really coaching the principals.
So I don't want to minimize the time frame that the old system had been in place. So you're changing years and years of practices as far as how people were doing something and changing that around. As Dave indicated, we went out early, 3 years ago, had a pilot, expanded a pilot. You may not know, we convene a meeting every year of all of our administrators, our principals, our networks at Brooklyn Tech. We had Charlotte. Matter of fact, at the first meeting when I first started as chancellor, I started as chancellor in April. We had the meeting in May. We had Charlotte and David Coleman both talking about Common Core and the Danielson rubric. And we've been drilling down on that and supporting it and having talent coaches out there working with our principals and administrators to do that.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We have New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott and Deputy Chancellor David Weiner in with us talking about the new evaluation system that took effect this term. And Jenny in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jenny.
How are you? Thank you for having my call.
Sure.
I'm a special education teacher, and I've been in New York City for 8 years. And my question is, when we talk about teacher evaluation system, I have students who have various needs. I track IEP goals. You know, we also want them to work up to the standards. But how can you fairly evaluate not only special education teachers, but also teachers who have sets of students or students who receive services based on test scores, when we know that, you know, we're working from an uneven playing field very much with students who have disabilities.
So Dave will get directly to your question. We were with a group of teachers last night, matter of fact, and that question also came up. And you know, it is a question to be addressed because you are doing, one, great work with students who need you there. And it is an uneven playing field in that there are a variety of different needs, especially based on the student's IEP.
Yeah, it's a great question, and thanks for calling in. We actually, for the last 3 years, we ran a pilot. We actually conducted essentially the evaluation system in about 250 schools to determine how to best support teachers in understanding the new system, as well as to determine if there was any unintended consequences, if there were negative impacts on teachers of students with disabilities or teachers of students who didn't speak English as a first language. We worked explicitly with District 75 actually on this, which is the district in New York City that has the majority of students with disabilities in it. So the one thing we found, which is very good, is that there really was no negative impact. The percentage of teachers that were effective and highly effective was the same whether you were teaching an AP class at Stuyvesant or whether you were teaching a nonverbal class of six students in a District 75 school. So we saw across the board that there really weren't any differences depending on the types of students that you were teaching. Secondly, we also recognize that the most important part of this is actually teacher development. As the chancellor mentioned, we were with a group of teachers last night, and we actually asked them about ADVANCE and what impact it had on their school. And about 65% of them said that they were having more conversations about teaching and about instruction. And that may look slightly different in different classes. And at Stuyvesant, you may be talking about what types of questions and discussion techniques you may be using. And that might be different techniques than you're using in a nonverbal District 75 class. But we found that having those conversations about what good instruction looks like really helped teachers improve their performance.
So here's kind of a related question that came in via Twitter, related in that it has to do with teachers in different subjects. This says, what's the system for evaluating teachers whose subjects don't have standardized tests? How do their percentages work?
That's a great question. The basis of the new evaluation system is that you're using multiple measures. So you essentially are using two assessments for teachers that teach students with state tests. They're using one state test, and then they're also using one local measure. And then 60% of the evaluation is based on the principal observation. So the two local measures for teachers who are teaching students without state tests, which are essentially growth metrics that we're using. We actually piloted quite a few of them over the last couple of years to determine which ones were most rigorous, which ones were most fair and accurate. We wanted them to be valid measures. And we basically are using these types of measures. Each school actually created a committee, and the committee at the school determined the local measures.
And the committee consists of?
The committee consists of actually four teachers and four administrators. And they at the school had to make a determination about the local assessment that you were going to use for your particular school. So schools made lots of different choices.
Are you finding a lot of variety in
those choices
regarding that 20%?
We are. We're finding wide variety. Some schools chose to create new assessments that they were using. Some schools adopted assessments they had been using for years. And other schools said, we want to be held accountable, every teacher in the school, for the students in our school that are taking the state test. So I may be teaching 8th grade science, but I want to be held accountable for the 8th grade ELA exam. So schools have made a wide variety of different choices. And we like the idea. We have 1,700 different schools in our city. Every school is a little bit different, and this gives the school an opportunity to individualize their assessment for their teachers.
And that also goes back to the first caller as well, in dealing with those students who are in our special ed programs and students with disabilities, and how we really take that into consideration, and that student will be considered as far as the discussion with the teachers and the administrators.
Deanna in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the Chancellor and Deputy Chancellor.
Hi,
hello.
Good morning. I'm a 7th grade middle school teacher in Brooklyn, and I happen to be home with a fever today.
I'm sorry to hear that. You didn't have to say that for me. I approve, but I'm sorry to hear you have a
but
fever.
But not too sick to call into a talk show.
When I heard Mr. Walcott.
Deanna, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
So my comment is to specifically address the 20% of our evaluation, which is coming from local measures.
Yep.
I really want to speak for a lot of teachers and saying that I don't have a problem with 60% of my evaluation coming from thoughtful observations from my administrator, who I have a great deal of respect and a great relationship with. However, my school has literally been crippled by the local measure assessments that we've been forced to administer this year. We've given assessments in ELA, in social studies, and in science. I don't know if people have seen the Mayor Bloomberg test, which was given. There was a big article in the Daily News about it recently. We literally had to give an assignment that used a commencement speech from Mayor Michael Bloomberg as a writing prompt. And my school has received little information about how we're supposed to implement these, process this data, and it's falling on the teachers. And people are stressed out. They're exhausted. My school is at the point where they're offering to pay us overtime to get these assessments done. And it's sort of like being handed a shovel to dig your own grave, in the sense that they're poor assessments. They have no role in our instruction aside from the fact that they're just going to be used to evaluate us. And we're grading the tests that are later, we're going to have to do this again in the spring, and then they're going to somehow compare the results. So my question is, does Chancellor Wolcott, are you involved in this process? Have you seen these assessments, and are you aware of the negative effect that they're having on our schools right now? Literally this week, this is all that's happening in my school. We're rushing to get these tests.
So short. We'll give you a very comprehensive answer to your question and feel better, and feel better as well. So, I mean, I am definitely involved, and that's why we're here on the radio show. We were with teachers last night, whether through me directly or my staff. We're meeting with folks, getting feedback on a regular basis. As David indicated, we had a pilot in place, and we learned a lot from the pilot. And we factor all these decisions in as we move forward in doing the assessments and as we move forward with the evaluations. I need to really, I think, be fair in that the example you gave about Mayor Bloomberg's test, I mean, it was a commencement address, and we asked students, and it was an option for the schools to analyze it, to give evidence to it. And we've used live people who are alive examples before in assessments. So it's not that the mayor dictated this. It's just one example of a commencement speech that was given at Stanford University. So that's the general part. And then specific to your question, Dave can respond.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question, and I'm sorry that you're having so much difficulty at your school with these new assessments. I just want to give listeners a little bit of a background on this. As we mentioned, we actually had a pilot that we ran. So essentially all of the assessments that we created actually were created by teachers in New York City. We worked with about 80 different schools, and we actually did literally thousands of different assessments that we were basically piloting and trying out in lots of different schools. Teachers would give the assessments. They'd give us feedback on it. We'd make adjustments to it. We had to make sure they were valid and reliable. We had to make sure that they were grade appropriate. And so we did an enormous amount of work over the last 2 years to really get these try to get the assessments up to speed as quickly as we can. But I think some of the issues that we've heard in schools, and you mentioned this in your comments, were this is just such a new component of what is actually happening in schools. You know, obviously, the use of student assessments has never been part of teacher evaluation in the past, and so there is a bit of an adjustment process that is occurring in schools. We worked actually with our teachers union to free up 3 additional hours each month so that schools could have time to give the assessments, to score them, to learn about how they operationalize. We gave schools money. I was glad to hear that your school is actually paying you additional money, because we did give schools extra money because we knew that during this kind of transitional time, there was going to be a lot more work both on teachers and on administrators to actually do this right. But we think that in the long run, the use of multiple measures, using student assessments combined with principal observation, really gives us the most robust and accurate representation of teaching practice.
We're getting a lot of very unhappy people posting on our comments page, teachers who are saying things like, this sounds so reasonable when you lay it out on the radio like this, but in practice, it's confusing, it's discouraging, it's intense, it doesn't work, it's wasting money, it's wasting my time, all of this stuff. We're not going to settle all of this today in our limited time, but after 12 years of Mayor Bloomberg, the union is more angry than I've ever seen it. And what I hear from many teachers, and maybe you'll say these are the ones who get in touch with the media, but what I hear is that 12 years of these policy changes have left teachers demoralized at historic proportions, and that even if you're doing a better job at evaluating teachers, you're also scaring teachers away, and that at least as big a problem is teacher retention. So do you acknowledge that morale from the reforms is a major problem?
So let me tackle this in a couple of ways. One, I think that our teachers are doing a masterful job. When I go into classrooms and I see them on a regular basis, I think the level of teaching has improved significantly. And it's as a result of a variety of factors. And our teachers are focused on the classrooms. And obviously, we have been in battles at times with the union, and I know that impacts on our workforce, but I, the mayor, value our teachers and their outstanding work, and we're very appreciative of that. Sound bites and all the other rhetoric aside, I think the reforms have benefited our students in the long run. Any metric you look at, our students are graduating at higher rates. You see improved access to advanced placement courses, SATs. I mean, so as you analyze metrics, we have been benefited as a result of the reform.
And teacher morale might be a necessary casualty of that?
No, see, but I'm not going to make a generalization that teacher morale is down overall. I mean, you have some who are impacted and some who are not impacted. And when I interact with teachers, they're respectful, they are honest, and they're focused on their classroom. And that's what I see. And obviously, with something like this, though, that is so brand new, that's changing practice that's been in place for 80 years, and then you layer on top of it new Common Core standards and new methods of teaching, you're going to have people who are trying to learn new things, and that's going to impact them.
And on that point, the New York Times has an article today about surprising results from the study of Washington, D.C.'s recent evaluation system. And one of the findings that was written up was that more low-performing teachers than expected left the system after their poor evaluations. And that was considered a good thing. Is that one of your goals here? Did you see that study? Do you do this the same way here?
I saw the study, but I want to reverse it as well, in that you have teachers who are highly effective who are valued in the system as well. And our goal is to make sure that we make sure that our teachers are doing the job and become more effective in doing their jobs. And unfortunately, you're going to have a workforce where some people may not be able to do that job, and they shouldn't be a teacher. And I think what we talked about last night with the group of teachers that we met with is a collaboration of having lead teachers in place and master teachers and working around a variety of these issues.
Yeah. In general, no one thinks that ineffective teachers should be in the classroom. We should be moving to have these people leave or find a new job or find something else that's going to make them happy and satisfied in their life. But we're talking about a minuscule number of teachers. The 95, 96% of teachers that are doing an excellent job, they need support and development. The study actually looked both at lower effective teachers, so basically the lowest quality of teachers. And they did find that higher percentage of teachers left, but they actually also found in the same study that more highly effective teachers stayed in D.C. And to us, that's really what we care about. We actually think this system is transformational because it's all about teacher development. It's about taking teachers where they are and helping them improve along the line. You know, there's going to be political and public focus on the ineffective teachers. But for us, it's really about the 95% of teachers that are doing a good job that we need to help do even better.
Chancellor Wolcott, Deputy Chancellor Wiener, we're over time. But before you go, I have to ask you about Avante Okendo, the missing autistic child gone for nearly 2 weeks now. As we all know, after walking out of his District 75 special ed school, the whole city is hoping against hope for his safe return. Have you reviewed safety protocols or the location for such schools for kids with serious disabilities? I understand this school is at the juncture of a Long Island Railroad yard, the Pulaski Bridge, Queens Midtown Tunnel, East River, and several construction sites. It looked to our reporters like there were many hazards for a child who might wander out of that building.
So several things. One, we have referred the case to Special Commission of Investigation, SCI, so a thorough investigation is taking place and will take place. Two, this past Friday, I went out to the site and saw the site. And interestingly enough, this school was one of the schools we visited on an opening day, matter of fact. And it's a brand new building and a brand new school. And it's in a very nice location. And unfortunately, we have this very tragic case where a child has been missing for a long period of time. And we want to get to the bottom of it. We're not going to leave any stone unturned as far as finding out what happened. We have District 75 schools located in a variety of buildings all throughout the city. And we need to see exactly what happened. I've reviewed the tape as well. We'll leave it up to the investigators to determine that. My heart and my prayers go out to the family. I'm not just a chancellor, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather. And so obviously we want this child found and we want to get to the bottom of what happened. So we'll let the investigators do their job and then we'll have a report out to both the family and the community itself.
WNYC was told by the family's lawyer that his individual education plan included a one-on-one aid. You have said it did not. Could you have been wrong about that?
No. I have the IEP or the individual education plan for the child. And normally we don't talk about this because it really skirts the line of confidentiality for a child itself. But it's a 6-to-1-to-1 class, and the child was in a 6-to-1-to-1, which means 6 students, 1 teacher, and 1 paraprofessional. So I am not incorrect, but again, I'm not going to get into a debate with a lawyer because really all the attention should be around this child, and that's what we're going to do.
Last thing, does the way he apparently left the school raise issues of co-locating special ed schools with regular ed schools? Some reporting say he may not have been identified as, you know, a student from that side of the hall, and that's how he was allowed to leave.
So does not raise issues at all around the co-location of District 75 schools into school buildings. I mean, what we've done is have a major policy around making sure that District 75 schools are in all of our newly constructed buildings, and we've been doing that for a while. And we have a number of students who are part of District 75 who are in buildings that are not just District 75, and we've had one very, very unfortunate case. And that one very, very unfortunate case will warrant an investigation on how it took place, but that should not indict the entire system.
Any last word for teachers who feel stressed by the new evaluation system?
Yeah. I mean, I really do want to focus on that. I know we're over time, but I think morale is so important, and our teachers are doing a fantastic job, and we're changing a system around that's been in place for 80 years. And this is a major, major period of transformation for the system. I think people should move out the political part of the question that you asked earlier about the mayor and what the teacher who was homesick talked about with the example, and take a look at what this is about. This is about making sure that we have effective teachers in the classroom who are doing a great job in educating our students to make them college and career ready. That's what this is about. It's changing a paradigm around that has existed, that's been a failure from the beginning as a SNU system, and putting a rigorous system, and we know there's going to be stress. And what I would say to them, Brian, is that they should express it to their administration when they encounter me or my staff. Let us know. We want that feedback. We want to make the system better. And as Dave indicated, we've been in a 3-year pilot. And we've learned a lot from it. We're going to continue to learn, and we should make sure that this benefits our students in the long run.
New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott, Deputy Chancellor for Talent, Labor, and Innovation David Weiner, thank you both very much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the legendary writer, farmer, and activist Wendell Berry. Stay with us.